Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I am Mr. Forest. Thank you so much for joining us. This week I have a conversation with Lisa Broderick, and she has a book called All the Time in the World. And it basically has to do with probably a problem most of us face, and that is how to deal with time and often feeling like we don't have enough of it. And that's a curious thing if you really start to think about it philosophically, but in the brass tacks world of walking our walks, we're often like, how did I run out of time today? Or like, I always have an endless to-do list. So I think you will enjoy us getting into this conversation. But first, I did want to let you know about a couple live events. The first one is a live stream that any of y'all, can join in on. That's December 4th. And that is going to be in the ceremony style, like I did at the beginning of the pandemic. Well, we're doing another one. And this is to launch the Journey Space platform. So you can go over to journeyspace.com and you can watch the live stream for free there on December 4th. But you could also see, if you'd like to join one of the small groups that we're going to have. And these groups, this is what Journey Space is all about. They are live facilitated groups. So there's a facilitator hosting a group of 20 people at a time to support you as you go through a journey. You know, how you define a journey, of course. So you can read a lot more about it and all the details at journeyspace.com. So I just want to let you know, because it's fun to gather online for these live stream events all at the same time around the world and enter into intentional space. I think there's something really powerful about that. So I hope to see you then. You can also go to eastforest.org and you can get more info on that. And then in the, shall we say, face-to-face world, in December 17th, I'm playing a ceremony concert in Boise. And a couple more dates going to be added soon. But I did just announce I'll be in Dublin and London. So it's my first dates in both of those places. And that is in April of 2022. Tickets are on sale also at eastforest.org. Get on the newsletter if you'd like to learn about these tickets and other things when they get launched first. And the other last thing I want to say was that if you're looking to get some gifts for the holidays, we do have some new dad hats coming in the East Forest store, as well as my sheet music, piano sheet music book. We have Lorna Doone did some wonderful transcriptions for all you piano players out there. But the perfume oils, the vinyl, possible vinyl, Spores, Ram Dass vinyl, and some of the garments we have. I think you need to order those by the first week, maybe, of December, I believe, in order for them to be guaranteed to arrive by ye olde Christmas, if that is your goal. So I just want to kind of give you a heads up on some shipping deadlines. You know, if that's your thing, certainly appreciate the support. Speaking of support, thanks to everyone in our council. The East Forest Council is on Patreon, patreon.com/eastforest. We do a monthly council, and it's also a space where I get to share some podcast extras and unreleased music, demos, things like that. It's a great way to support this podcast and the East Forest Project in general. So see if that's something you'd like to do. And thanks for reviewing the podcast. Woof! There it is. Got it all out. There might be more, but we don't need more because we're running out of time. I mean, I could talk, but you know, we don't have all the time in the world. So let's dig into this conversation with Lisa Broderick right now. Thank you, Lisa Broderick, for being here. It's nice to meet you. I got a hold of this book, All the Time in the World. Thank you for having them share that with me.
Krishna, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Before we get into some of these stretchy, strange ideas, I mean, I think a good place to start is if you just kind of give us a little bit of background, who you are, where you're coming from, and that'll give us a little bit of context when we get into the weeds here.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. As you so often dive into, meditations and consciousness, nature, how things work, are issues that I've always wondered about. You know, the nature of the universe and why we're all here and how it really works. And so years and years ago, as a meditator, a young meditator, I began to experience time and and life in a more vivid sense, we'll say. And what I learned is that there was an ability that I'd had since I was a child to do things with time, and literally with time. So it seemed to slow down for me. And using that, I used it quite liberally in my growing up. When I was younger, I would have many experiences of the zone. And then when I began to meditate in my 30s, it really, really came into focus. And I began to use it as a practice, because I figured if we could slow down time, if we could slow things down, how much more could we get out of life, and how much less would we worry? Would we wonder? Would we have consternation and issues with the way things were? So I developed it as a practice, but not leaving it as just that, diving into ancient wisdom and ancient practices, India, Buddhism, Kabbalism, and ancient Christianity and Judaism, to figure out in these ancient cultures how they dealt with these issues of time. And it's pervasive in every ancient culture. And then also melding that with research. What did the latest research say about time? And as it turns out, time is the biggest problem in physics today. Most physics equations that rule the universe work just as well in a time direction forward as backwards. So what does that say about the nature of time? And then all the time in the world is the compilation of research and experience and personal stories and stories of other people who have had their individual experiences with time, which really shaped their perspective and changed their lives. And that brought me to where I am today, speaking to you.
Yeah. So let's zoom out a second here. You know, most of us think about time and we're like, it's not something we can control. It's just sort of like the substrate of being incarnate. I like to think of it kind of like a map. It's not the territory, but if it's quite clear that there's only this present moment, there always has been this present moment forever and ever and ever. But in a way, time is our perception of things moving and growing, birthing, decaying, dying, which is a real process. But it's sort of us deciding that that happens like before or after. It's really all happening in the same nowness. So is there something about the way I'm describing sort of the reality of what time is to your relation of how you're playing with it yourself? Because in the end of the day, is it a perception?
Well, that's an interesting question, and that's at the heart of the book. And so in combining science with psychology, spirituality, and the things you described, you do get a different answer. From a spiritual perspective, from a meditation perspective, a human experience perspective, there is only the now moment. And that is all that we have. With that said, from other perspectives, when we deal with time, as I mentioned about science, the scientific equations have time as an element, but it works just as well in a time direction forward as backwards. So, and there are experiments in quantum physics in particular, which suggest that the now and the future influence the past. So that unidirectional arrow of time from the past, our memory, to the now moment, to the future, it does not hold in modern physics. And what is it about that we could use in our personal lives to lead better lives for all of us? So I came up with an equation. Time is one part perception, as you suggest, and one part physical. And if we can change the perception part, we may just be able to influence our physical world. And that's what this book is about.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are thinking to themselves, well, I understand the perception part, but how would it change my world in ways that are meaningful beyond... I think we get the idea of being in the flow state versus not being in the flow state. It's kind of like you're awake, you're asleep, so to speak. You're aware versus less aware. You're with a train of thoughts versus not. So how is this different than meditation to you?
Well, what I wondered was, from my own personal experience, does how we show up for a situation in our minds affect our physical experience of the world, and in particular time? And I think many people would say, if they're observant about their own lives, if they go into a room full of angry people, they know it. They can feel it without any physical suggestion, no throwing things, no violence. So those people in that room showed up to a situation in a way in their minds, and there was a physical sensation out in the world. In science, mostly people would say if it's in your head, it's not real. What I've been experimenting with in combining meditation and metaphysics and psychology and physics is that if it's in your head, it may be real. Can I prove that without a doubt? No. Are there experiments which suggest that it's true? Yes, many experiments, both scientific experiments, psychology experiments, our own personal anecdotal experiences, and in particular, the experience of slowed down time, which almost everyone has had an experience of. When people really think about their experience of slowed down time, they don't think of it usually as something that they just remembered in more vivid detail. They think of it as having been able to move themselves out of the steering wheels in a horrible car crash so that they were not killed. There's a story in my book of a police officer who's now a police chief moving out of the way of bullets, like the Matrix.
Yeah.
That's a physical manifestation of a perception. So there's some place where science meets psychology, where physics meets thoughts, that we do actually influence the physical world. This book explores that question. It has practical exercises. It has exercises for slowing down time. I myself do it regularly. Is it only my perception? Possibly. Does it help me in my life and actually result in a slowed down perception of things for me so that I can catch a glass as it falls? Absolutely. So I think we can't say with certainty yet. Science certainly suggests it's true. Modern science, quantum physics, of course. In our physical world, we just have the need to move beyond our rigid perception that time is an immutable, singly paced experience that we cannot change. That's what this book is designed to do, to bring people to a place with so much evidence and so many practices that if they try a few things for themselves, they might just find that they can actually slow down time to have all the time in the world.
So I hear you saying that. I mean, of course, it's changing. It's about your perspective always, right? I mean, at the end of the day, our consciousness, that's all there is like our way we're viewing and experiencing the world. And the thing with quantum anything is that, you know, anytime I talk to someone who works in quantum physics, they say nobody understands quantum physics. And and then I also find that all of us who are laymen, we start to hear certain things about the quantum world, which essentially everything starts to break down in that everything of form becomes basically all space. And the rules start to become more non-dualistic and strange. But in that way, it becomes sort of an easy way to describe things we don't understand with something that we don't fully understand in a way. So it's like the word quantum itself, it's hard to say like what that even means.
That's true. Know?
And so if you had to describe it a different way, because you could say that time is, you can play with it. And so we're playing with our perceptions. I get that. But at the same time, there's something immutable about it. I think we'd all argue, like, we can't necessarily stop the progress of life. You know, things being born, things dying. There are boundary conditions to our experience.
Which are based in science. The second law of thermodynamics, which of course that things decay, entropy, die, fall away, age, grow. Well, the one thing I would say before we leave the world of quantum physics is this, and that is, while no one has ever seen a quanta, which is actually not a thing, it's a measure, of course, but these microscopic, tiny, tiny particles that we speak about because they're modeled in mathematics, increasingly, scientists are proving that the quantum world, which seems totally separate from our large world, is not at all separate. In fact, recently in Physics Today, an article was released where quantum entanglement of mechanical systems was proven for the physical world. Now, quantum entanglement is where there's two quantum particles which have some property. let's say they're blue. It's not the case, but let's say they're both blue. And you separate them by as much as thousands of miles. You take one into outer space. And if you do one thing to one of the particles, the other particle instantaneously becomes the same as the particle it's been separated from, transcending the speed of light. Now, that is a pretty remarkable statement, which has been proven in science mathematically, but they're actually proving that in our physical world, again, in this article in Physics Today. So if that's true, there's something about the nature of time and how it works that we don't know. And I think the answer does lie in the quantum world, which, as you described, as Richard Feynman so wonderfully said, no one understands quantum physics. But we may be understanding it better as competent, qualified, brilliant researchers continue to do this type of work, bringing what we have been modeling mathematically into our large physical world of things and the Earth and the universe to show that it exists there as well.
I mean, the fact that we're working, there's companies working on, well, most every country of major power is working on quantum computing, and that that's even a thing. And that, you know, the idea when that becomes online, that would be so magnitudes of power faster that, you know, could be leading to some form of singularity, if not obsolescence, of like all of our other systems of computing. Apparently, that's a real thing.
So it is a real thing, for sure.
It's more than like some ideas about, you know, what's a quantum leap is or not. It's like, okay, that's actually a machine that's being built. So let's get into then some of these exercises you talked about. Like, give us a sense, or maybe even an example, we have time, of what these are. Like, what is this doorway in? So maybe we can better understand this method.
Wonderful. Well, that's a wonderful question. If this question, which is always, which is since I began meditating and having these experiences so many years ago, that I've always wondered about, does how we show up for a situation in our minds affect the physical experience of our world? That is what these exercises do. And so a very simple exercise would be for everyone who's not driving, who might be listening to this. If you, let's say we close our eyes now, right? And we do some meditative practices, which I'm sure all of our listeners might be familiar with. In particular, a medical meditation practice, which is a regular inhalation through our nose, but a long, slow exhalation out through the mouth, triggering the parasympathetic nervous system. We're moving into a meditative state very quickly. It's not a meditation, but to be relaxed enough that we could have our minds be focused. The practice that I call this is focused perception. And focused perception is, it's an awareness of our surroundings using very clear focus, but perceiving rather than drilling down on something like a laser beam. You're perceiving. So if people continue to breathe in through their nose, regular exhalation and a long, slow exhalation out through their mouth, a couple of times so we're relaxed. You could pick up your shoulders and drop them back. Move your head around. Sit comfortably if you like. I've done these exercises in many positions, lotus, straight arms, straight legs, as they do in China for energy. And become very relaxed. What we could do is everyone go back in your mind to a situation that you are terrified will occur. It could be that the phone call, you didn't get the job. The check doesn't come. The loan doesn't come through. Your fight with your loved one is irreparable. Some really challenging thing. It could be big or it could be small. And live that experience in the most visceral way we possibly could as humans. You're going into a movie in our minds where we're living an experience of this future eventuality, which we dread for some reason. Living it and really experiencing everything about it so that it's beginning to affect us on a physical level. And then suddenly, as I say, that's not what happened. Stop. And as you stop, what we do is we say to ourselves, that didn't happen. Now imagine the opposite. The phone rings and it's the job. You're hugging your loved one. The loan came through. The job came through. Your home is safe. We live an alternate experience, another experience. This is all in our minds. do that for a while and live that in a way so that becomes a new way of showing up to the situation. And we can sit with that for a moment in a meditative way. And then when we're ready, breathe out and open our eyes. Now, what just happened? It seems like that was purely experiential, but really that entire exercise was all about time. And it was all about how we may show up for a situation in the future that we're projecting is a problem because we don't want it to occur in a way that we're imagining. What I would suggest, and I do this every evening. In fact, during the day, I make a note of what I want to do this exercise for, something big or small that the next day or somewhere down the road for me is going to be unpleasant that I don't want to happen. Inevitably, Krishna, what happens for me with practice, when I show up to that situation, I don't show up with that dread. And with all of the manifestation books going way back to, you know, we all stand on the shoulders of giants who have been working in this area for so long. Fear is the greatest, loudest ringing bell for manifestation there is. What we've done in this simple exercise, having to do with time, is that we've removed it from our awareness. We have removed it from how we're going to show up to that situation in the future. And I would suggest that if people do that, a little smile may come to faces and a thought may occur when experiencing the situation and it doesn't happen the way they dreaded. Now, could it? Sure. But does how we show up for that situation affect our experience of it or even physical reality? And this is where the quantum world comes into play. We know for a fact that consciousness collapse, the double slit experiment, the observation of matter affects the matter. We're just not sure how for our own lives. What if we just change that for ourselves in this little exercise about time so that how we show up for that situation in the future is now different because we're different? And the outcome is different. That's what this book is about.
Yeah, I hear like there's this cognitive behavioral element. It's almost like finding a memory or a perception of the future that you're saying is inherently negative in your head and has a charge. So it has like its particular pathways in your brain. And then consciously rewriting it, and rerouting it to something that's more benevolent or positive. And then basically experiencing that and feeling that in your imagination, which I'm totally on board with. And I know that when we imagine things in fantasy, it's almost in many ways as real as the real thing in your head, the effect it has on your experience and your body. But then you're arguing that that choice, that sort of new neural pathways has some kind of reverberation into the future. Like that there's the quantum leap to take here is that echoes into the world in front of us that's coming towards us.
Well, the interesting thing in the most advanced science is that the suggestion is that is the case. Those are thought experiments that these advanced scientists are doing. In this book are actual practical experiments that we can do for ourselves. And of course, we're leading our lives and we're not in a scientific, rigorous, you know, mode of being. With that said, the more we do this, I would suggest that when we show up for these situations, we are going to be different in a way that's scientifically supported. And the situations that we experience are going to be different as well. Does it mean that we can completely erase a negative thing that happened to us? No. Does it mean that we can change our memory of it so that it no longer has that charge and doesn't affect our experience of the world going forward? Yes. Would quantum mechanics suggest that the observation changes matter? Yes. We just don't know how that all works. What this is designed to do is to change how we think about time, to change our experience of life and our experience of it. And one more thing about that. The most important words for humans in any language may be these: I have a feeling. Why? Because they express how we are about to show up for a situation. That, at its essence, in some sense, is the same as the research that is going on in quantum mechanics. It's the observation. This book isn't meant to be a magic pill or explain all of that science. Of course, again, this is the biggest problem in physics. But can we use what we know now in these practical exercises with the science, change our perspective of time and lead better lives? Absolutely.
So what do you mean the most important thing is I have a feeling? You're saying like recognizing your feelings or...
No, I have a feeling I'm going to get that job. I have a feeling.
Intuition.
Intuition. Well, I have a feeling. I have a feeling that the fight with my loved one is irreparable. You're showing up. That is a programming of yourself, as you said, a charge for how you will show up in the future. I have a feeling. So we can change that powerful experiential way of being, I have a feeling, into something that we can harness for our lives. So that I have a feeling is... I have a feeling that phone will ring and it's the job that I want. I have a feeling that I will see the check. And this experiment, this exercise that we did is one of the very beginning rudimentary ones. There are experiments that take it to the next level to stop the second hand on a clock face using the same approach.
That sounds like bending a spoon.
That's like bending a spoon.
It's not
except
the spoon
I write it
that
down
bends.
In a book and I'm not afraid to lead people through it. That can be done. Is it perception? Yes. And also the book is meant to be scientifically rigorous. Are there many, many scientific explanations for why we can apparently perceive a stopped secondhand on a clock face with this experiment? Of course there are. And I cite many of them. When one does it themselves and they experience it, it's meant to change their framing of time. The possibility that we may have more control over time than we think, and then applying that in all of these ways to create our day, to reverse the past, to reverse negative feelings, to essentially manifest through the lens of time a life that we want.
Well, how does that work in the world of modernity when you're busy? Let's say it's one of those days where you've got more to accomplish than you can do, and you'd say, I would love to have a little extra time here, and the kids have to get dinner, and I got to pick up the thing from the store.
That is it. In fact, I had to do that today with this and other things going on today. It's been that for me. So this is what I did. I lived a very similar exercise to what we just did, but rather than have a negative charge, because I wasn't really afraid of the day, I was aware that many things were packed in a sense, in a time sense, that they were close together and it might be unpleasant. And so what I did instead in my meditation, a very similar meditation, which is in the book, which is I slowed it all down. I slowed myself down as though I were going through a ballet. In fact, I call it a quantum ballet. I'm going through a ballet through my day, which a ballet could look like chaos on a stage, or it could look like a wonderful orchestration, right? A choreograph of things moving around in perfect timing. Another exercise in the book is to do just that, and I used it this morning, to slow down my perception so that when I'm showing up for this, for other things I need to do in my day, I'm not, oh my gosh, I'm afraid it won't work out. Because that feeling is not only changes me in my belief, my supposition about this book, it changes my experience of reality and it changes other people. Just like we talked about when we first began speaking today, if you walk into a room full of angry people, you'll know it. If you show up for a situation completely frazzled that you don't have enough time, you will not have enough time.
Yeah. So I hear you say like you're kind of watering the garden of your day instead of with anxiety. You're choosing what fertilizer to put in
a way. That's a wonderful way of putting it, and slowing down time. I mentioned before there are many stories in the book of in great detail of slowed down time in a way that it's nearly impossible that the people who report these things could have experienced them. So Don Miguel Ruiz, wonderful author, again, on the shoulders of giants on whom we stand today, wrote the foreword for the book. And in it, he describes, as a medical student in Mexico City, being in a terrible car crash where, in slow motion, he saved his own life in great detail by moving out of the way. Now, that was a second that passed. The car rolling down the hill, him in grave danger, hitting things. But in his awareness, something happened for him that he slowed down time, moved out of the way of the steering column, and did not die. That is not an unusual story. In fact, it's been well researched. People have these perceptions of slowed down time when they are in danger. And again, not descending into fear. I believe fear is different than danger. Danger is an innate sense. Fear is an emotion which is triggered in parts of the brain. When we sense danger, we may be able to experience time differently. What if we could harness that during our day, like I just did today, to slow down my day, move out of the way of my steering column, you know, the call that's booked back to back or runs long, so that I truly have all the time in the world? The combination of all of the anecdotal experiences, the science, the practical exercises for people to take part in, is meant to shift a perspective. It's to change our perspective of time so that we can change our experience of it, to truly lead a life which is, of course, our best possible lives, and to have, in our sense, all the time in the world.
We got the title, All the Time in the World.
Doesn't everybody want that?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, there's a poetry to that, because it's an oxymoron. It's to say that, like, as if time is something that we can grab. And in some ways, what we're talking about is letting it go. It's not focusing on the time aspect and thinking more about it's sort of charting our path in the energy we want to bring to the table.
And, well, that's why I was so excited to speak to you today, because that intersection of meditation, nature, consciousness, research, charting our own path, I believe we're far more powerful. And as a meditator, I actually know this for myself, than we really experience our lives as human beings today. But I don't believe that will always be the case. We will unpack this going forward. This book is designed to give people a little head start through the lens of time, of all the things we could manifest, you know, an airplane in your backyard or a pickle in your lap, or things that wonderful authors have talked about, manifesting physical things. That's a little more challenging. Slowing down time, almost everybody has done it. Almost everyone. Could we practice so we can do it on command, so that you can catch a glass as it falls in slow motion? Absolutely you can. And that's what this is designed to do.
When you think about, like, in a car accident, when people report in near-death experiences, their perception really slowing down, you could see that being a really evolutionary advantage and a natural quality we have. And in some ways, our hurried lifestyle, the anxiety and fear we feel, is probably largely associated to traumas and our modern lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like our attention being pulled in a bazillion different directions, primarily from technology, and our, you know, even just having like electricity and our ability to work late at night and all the things we couldn't do for many, many thousands of years. We haven't really evolved in a way to move in this way and at this pace. And every year, you know, it gets more and more and more, you know, especially since the advent of the iPhone. So it's kind of to say that these are natural traits. It's more relearning that which we already know and tapping back into sort of our natural ability to not just focus so much on the future and the past, and bringing to the table such negative, difficult emotions, as you're saying, because that kind of then is like, well, that's what's going to happen. That's what you're bringing to the table. And that's also maybe potentially, I'm hearing you say, causes what manifests in front of you.
It's possible. And again, the book is meant to explore the questions and meet that exploration with proven science in so many ways, with practical exercises, which ways that we can do it for ourselves. Another thing we all just experienced, or many of us, during the pandemic, a slowing down of time. So we were leading our lives around March 2020, and then suddenly everything stopped, at least here in the United States. And it stopped in ways that people were dislocated. They were disoriented. Their experience of time was all over the map. People told me that a year was one long day and they couldn't wait to get out of it, or that it passed so quickly that they thought 10 years had passed. No one had a sense of time. And as you mentioned going in, and this is, of course, scientifically based, there's an approach to understanding time, which time exists because motion happens, change occurs. When there's no change, there's no time. And so when everybody was at home, there was very little change and time stopped or didn't move forward as the arrow that we all think about. It slowed, it sped up, it was completely different. And then going back into our frenetic lives, what this book may do is help people regain the slow down time for when they did have all the time in the world because they weren't going anywhere. They ordered in, they worked from home. They hopefully, you know, with the exception of our wonderful first responders, you know, were able to spend time with their families in a way that slowed down time and removed that frenetic aspect of experience. Before we all get back to business as usual, maybe we could use science to change our perspective of time and practical exercises to do it for ourselves to regain that control over our lives.
Yeah, I think as putting aside the hardship of the pandemic itself and the economic stuff, you know, a lot of people really enjoyed not having to travel as much and not having to do as much. I mean, there was a real gift. It was sort of a permission because everyone was on board at the same time, whether you liked it or not. Mm-hmm. And as things pick up, on some level, it's about giving yourself permission. I mean, no one else is going to do it. You have to take your own volition to say, you know, how do I want to experience time? I mean, I have a friend down in Southern Utah who lives a very primitive lifestyle. I mean, literally, like he lives outdoors and does a lot of primitive skills. And he often says he's time rich. And I think that's similar to what you're saying. That's his perception, and it's building the world around him that he wants to see. And I mean, on one level, he's practically designed a life where he's not that busy. And on the other level, there's a choice of his own perception and how he wants to walk through the world. So I can see that feeling empowering for people, because I guess for the average person, the way time interacts with their life is one that they don't feel they have control over, right, where they feel that it's just like a law of the universe that they're working with, marching towards death, paying taxes along the way.
Well, maybe you mentioned something earlier, and that is the evolution of humans, the evolution of consciousness. Maybe it's a law of the universe that exists for us now, and maybe it's not an immutable law as we evolve into the future. Imagine being able to manipulate time where you could go back in time. Imagine you could go back and correct the past. Now, in quantum mechanics, of course, there are the quantum eraser experiment very famously suggested that the present and the future can change the past. So in a sense, that's time travel. But what if in some way for our minds, for evolution, we could actually do that? We could manipulate time by even a fraction of a second. The whole world would change, our whole experience. It means you might not only be able to correct the past, you could actually move around the Earth in an instant. Why? Because the Earth is moving. If you went back a half a second, you wouldn't be in the same place on Earth that you were when the half a second began. You'd be on a different place because the Earth is moving through space and the Earth is moving around. So for ourselves as human beings evolving, first of all, it's a wonderful story for time travel and fiction and, you know, on television and wonderful novels. But what if that's an evolutionary path that humans could develop for themselves? Certainly science is suggesting that time travel is out there. If it was way back as Einstein suggests with the Einstein-Rosen bridge, being able to time travel because of the existence of wormholes. But what if we have an evolutionary path where we could look forward to those types of things in addition to slowing down time in our present lives? And what if we could apply those to our lives today, that thinking, in order to, again, lead our best possible life, lead a life where we have meaning and fulfillment and and all the time we need to do the things we want. That's what fascinates me.
Well, things definitely get squirrely when you start talking about black holes and
don't they?
You know, the breakdown of all theory, and you know, we can, it's a strange thing. Did you ever hear the work of sort of this rogue physicist Nassim Haramein?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. It's some wild stuff. I think I saw a talk of his in New York City probably back in 2008. And I remember it was just this small room in the Lower East Side. And it was like, I don't know, 30 of us. And Sting was there.
Oh,
he was
my
just
goodness.
Leaning against the wall, just like listening. I was like, hey, it's Sting listening to Nassim Haramein. But I love this idea that there was like this fractal nature of black holes, and black holes being a kind of boundary condition into yet another perhaps universal space that
right.
everything from the center of our Earth to the center of our galaxy to the center of every atom, and that being a model for physics, which
yes.
totally puts things, you know, on their end. But but it, you know, we seem to have a pretty good agreement that black holes exist, and then that pretty much, you know, there's a lot of theories that just say like everything just breaks down in probably time too.
So
black holes, knows,
immense
you know?
Gravity. What happens with immense gravity? Time stops. Of course, if you were to experience the theoretically terrifying effects of a black hole, you probably wouldn't be alive anymore. With that said, from a mathematical perspective, time stops in a black hole. Why immense gravity? Gravity slows down time. That is a scientific fact. So already we're playing with time and we're playing with gravity. And the Earth generates gravity because matter generates gravity. So it's wonderful to think about. And of course, Nassim's theory about the fractal nature of time, there's a block nature of time, there's string theory. There's all of these different theories about how time works. And one day we may know, I believe we will know. But for today, can we combine what we know about science and our own lives? I think we can. So that we can feel like we have enough time. Even possibly going back and fixing the past, I do it all the time. Why? If I go back, let's say I have an argument and I misspeak or I call someone a name or I'm angry and I don't like that. I have a charge, meaning in the future, I'm going to show up to a situation, which in my research and my belief, when I show up to the future situation in a certain way, I'm going to affect the physical reality of that situation. What I want to do is remove the charge from the past, as though I'm erasing the past. So I go back and erase the conversation. I have it be loving. I don't say those hateful things. I hug someone or I apologize. And then when I show up in the future, because I'll run into them again, I'm different. Does that affect our physical reality? Well, we did all agree that walking into a room of angry people has a physical manifestation. If we remember to do these things, we can go through life like your friend, with a simple existence in our busy Western lives, combining both of them to literally lead the lives that we want to lead without the harried nature.
But are you worried at all that when we're going back into, let's say, traumatic situations, and typically with trauma, it's something that is being held and hasn't been effectively seen, heard, expressed, allowed to move on, to be released. And a lot of trauma-informed therapies that I've come across, essentially with like MDMA therapy, for instance, and PTSD, it has something to do with allowing allowing the trauma, the trigger to come up, and then being able to hold it with a kind of gentleness outside of all the things that normally get triggered around it, and give it space to be seen and heard so that you can move on from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, in this technique you're talking about, if you're going back to the past and you're trying to, or I think you said erase that thing or bring a different perception to it, I can see the value of that, but wouldn't it be important to also give that thing space to be naturally dissipate so that it can then be supplanted with a different idea or perspective?
Oh, yes, of course. And of course, you're speaking from a medical perspective, which is very, which has a lot of efficacy particularly in the therapies you're talking about. For a really great trauma, one may use both. For smaller everyday things, right? And we all have them. We bump a car, we speak angrily, we hang up on someone, we use foul language, we behave in a way that we're not proud of. For something like that, it's very useful because we change how we show up in the future. Have I personally used it and others used it for great, very great trauma? Of course. And it can be useful for that as well in terms of moving on. It's not meant to be a medical therapy where something like MDMA would treat PTSD. But I think it can be useful in order to change how we show up in the future so that when we are alone at night after having been attacked, when we are somewhere in our lives which reminds us of the trauma, we're showing up to the new situation differently. For that, it can be very useful.
It's kind of like planting seeds in your own consciousness. I'm really hearing you talk about like the habitual way we hold our previous experiences and how that then reflects in our futures, you know.
Yes. Well, that is what this is about. Back to the theory. Does how we show up in our minds for a physical situation affect our physical experience of the world in particular time? And does it affect others in a way that's supported by quantum mechanics in theory and in mathematics, but possibly increasingly being proven, as I suggested with the Physics Today article, to exist for our physical world, for a larger world? We don't know yet. Can we become more adept at it for our lives? Yes. And use it in ways that are remarkable. Again, the ability to use this to slow down time in an everyday sense is very achievable for people who have an ability to focus, who have an ability to be calm, who are meditative in nature or in practice. Clearly, someone who has a completely frenetic existence and couldn't have 5 minutes to do mindfulness would be challenged with something like this. But that's why the practice is called focused perception. It's a meditative state, which is not meditation. You don't go away. You remain perceiving so that you can access a different, I believe, a different way that one's brain works, the brain of flow, the brain of the now, the brain of Don Miguel Ruiz in his car, slowly spinning out of control, and the many, many other stories that really almost everyone has some experience of that, to harness that for our everyday life, to catch the glass, to catch the child, to not descend into a frenetic fear when something occurs and instead remain in that now moment. And of course, the now moment is infinitely long. As infinitesimally short as it is, it's infinitely long.
Yeah. It's such a trippy idea just to think that it's always been now. Jesus was now, we're here now, and everything that will come after us is still now. It's a mind bender, but it's the truth, and that's more almost logical than anything else. So it's fun to think about this stuff, and it sounds like for you, you're just really wanting to distill it down into some very small practical ways to bring it into your own life and see how it works for other people. So appreciate
that. Along with providing science, you know, I'm scientifically based. My family was clinically trained. Can we apply science in what we do know now to shift our own perspectives? Yes. Does that help in our experience of our lives and in particular time? It helps greatly. When we no longer subscribed to the illusion, as Einstein said, that time was an immutable arrow passing from the past through the now into the present, when we let go of that illusion, we have much more capacity to experience time in ways that we choose for our own lives.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can, as a collective people, stretch our time and fix a few of the problems we have out there with climate change or otherwise. But
yes, I'm working on it. There are many, many things to attend to. Just because it's a really big issue doesn't mean we shouldn't do everything we can to make the world a better place, particularly if it's always the now, then we have an unlimited amount of time to do that. We have all the time in the world.
So how can people track what you're up to? I know you've got some other writings, and I'm sure you'll have more in the future. What's the best way to connect?
Wonderful. Thank you. So on lisabroderick.com is a website which includes information about the book, my personal story, of course, blog, how to contact me, other ways to apply this, exercises that people can download, guided meditations, and of course, the book itself, which is available for pre-order and will be available on October 27th.
October 27th, yeah. And I think when people hear this, it'll be closer to that time, but I'm assuming they can get the book wherever they get books. It's from Sounds
That's right.
True. Well, cool. Thank you so much for sharing a bit about your world and these ideas. And oh, dare I say, thank you for your time.
the time puns are infinite. Another time pun.
I know. Well, they creep up in so many ways. And in some ways, it's illuminating to ourselves the way we hold time and harness time and or disregard time in some ways. You know, the terms like killing time and so forth. But
yes. It's not only the biggest problem in physics today, it's what we all base our lives on.
Well, it's kind of the only game in town in some ways with spiritual practices. It's often about letting go of the illusion of it or the need to worry about it too much, you know, non-dualistic things. At any rate, thank you so much for the episode again, and it's good to talk to you.
Krishna, thank you.
Thanks, Lisa, for coming on the show and for diving into the subject of time. This song that you're hearing in the background is called Sovereign for Radha, and it is for my Radha. Radha is in Florida right now with the kids, doing her Thanksgiving thing, seeing her family. She's a very large and broad family. I am going to Oregon to see my family, but not for a few days. I have to make a little bit of a shorter trip because I got to stay here and do some rehearsal for the December 4th live stream ceremony. And it's a lot of cables and routing, digital routing and physical routing. I'm incorporating some new instruments. So bottom line is I got to get some fluency with all that. And I need to do some shedding, such as the sacrifice of live performances, but that's okay. It's a wonderful gift that I like to give, and I'm looking forward to getting the gift of your attention and your presence, should you be able to attend. Okay, my friends, you keep walking your walk. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving if you're here in the United States of America. And for all of our friends elsewhere in the world, I hope you have a beautiful week. We can all be grateful for things, whatever time it is, whatever day it is, and I'm grateful for y'all. I'm grateful that we have a community and that we get to be able to share in artistic creation and reception and response and love and joy. You keep walking your walk, don't take any shit, but if you do, do it with grace.